Hello and welcome to the Cult of SMMI. I'm your host, Scott Moore. This week, we'll be talking to Patricia Budd. Patricia spent a little while within the Sisters Minor of Mary Immaculate. She has just an amazing story to tell. Now, as always, everything said on this podcast falls under the umbrella of allegedly. Mike Kovacs, any of the sisters that come on here, including Patricia Budd, any of the family members, these are their tales. I have no way of verifying them. I have no way of proving that they're false. What I want to do is establish a forum for these people to tell their stories. With that in mind, on to Patricia. Please introduce yourself.
Okay, so my name is actually Patricia Budd. I use Therese because that's my confirmation name. And I used it because when I was advocating for others, it was also during the time when the order was still active. So I had to protect myself, my identity.
All right. And let's start right from the beginning. How did you end up within the order? What led to you being in there?
Okay, well, it's very, I, first of all, was a wannabe Catholic at age 11, and didn't become baptized until 13. So I had a teenage conversion to the faith. It was because of my grandmother, her charity and her prayers and everything. I wanted to imitate her. And I also just felt like there was a calling, and, I was also came from a very abusive background, childhood, where there was actually child abuse and domestic violence, all that kind of stuff. But I survived that and actually excelled a lot in school, and I wanted to become a nurse. But I also knew that nursing was also in the ministry of God, that belonged to God. It wasn't us. It was God's healing through our hands or through our caregiving. So I was looking for an order, and I actually checked out the Sisters of St. Joseph in Massachusetts, and they said I had to go back to school, go to college, and I was discouraged. And then I checked out the Carmelite order, and they said I was too Franciscan. So you can have a big laugh about that, because I was, very Franciscan, because I went to St. Hyacinth and Granby, and they're run by the conventual friars, OFM conventuals. And that's how I knew about the order, is through them, because they used to work there at St. Hyacinth in Granby, Massachusetts, until something happened where they had to leave. But they still put their flyers out. And I remember it was a blue flyer, and it was saying Eucharistic adoration, centered, Eucharist-centered Marian, love St. Maximilian Kolbe and the Therese, the little flower, St. Therese. These were all the things I was looking for. Mm-hmm. And, and St. Francis of St. Clair. I knew my Catholic faith. I knew that Jesus Christ as human through St. Francis of Assisi and St. Clair of Assisi. So I really thought I was entering into something true and authentic. And I was very surprised to find out that, over the years it just became a cult, it just started to turn, or it was already there and I just didn't see the signs, because I was pretty, young. I think I entered when I was 21, 22. So, it was very, very hard for me to see these things, because I was very gullible, naive, whatever you want to call it. I just didn't see the signs.
I see. What do you feel they did to recruit you in? What made the SMMI appeal to you personally?
Well, there was family. It seemed like a balanced family type of life within religious life. It seemed also that they did have Eucharistic adoration. They were Marian. I mean, their habits were total blue. You know, how Marian can you get? And it's, yeah, it's like, and I, they followed St. Maximilian Kolbe, which, you know, like, I love St. Maximilian Kolbe, so it was just like really what I felt that I was called to be there, you know? And also, it's just that there, it, when you first get there, it's all hugs and it's all like, they're, yeah, you know, you're right about this. And, you know, like, as if they're trying to make you out like a saint. You know, and then when you become a postulant, they start breaking you down. And then when you get further on into religious life, they really break you down, you know, and this is like an unhealthy, unhealthy psychologically, spiritually, physically way of breaking down a human being. You know, this is like, I don't know, psychological warfare, you know. Brainwashing, all kinds of things that they would do. But at first, they were sweet as pie. And see, when I entered, I had to go from Springfield, Massachusetts, okay? I had to take a bus in the middle of the night because I worked the night shift. I was a CNA. So I took the bus. Then it was dark and I had to go cross to the train station. Well, there was a lot of crime in Springfield at that time. So the police were like very nice to have me like stay over to the bus station. But then I had to risk it going to the train station. They said, well, we'll watch you. We'll make sure you're safe. So they treated me like, cause they knew I was going in the convent cause I told them. And so I really like risked my life just to enter. You know, just to become a postulate or just to try out religious life, I was risking my life. My family was totally against it.
By the way, God bless you for the CNA. My mother was a CNA. That is that's not an easy job to have.
I'm still doing it. I love it. I've loved it. I had a dream when I was 8 years old that I would be doing nursing, and it just turned out that that happened to be my predominant job that I have now. And I still have, you know, I take care of a lady with cerebral palsy, so I love it.
That's fantastic. My mother worked with Alzheimer's patients.
Okay, so. Yep. I worked in the dementia, too. I worked in, like, institutions with, you know, they had dementia wards and all that stuff, dementia units. Yeah,
every last one of you guys, as far as I'm concerned, every CNA just vacuum tube to heaven, just boom, you're getting there.
I hope there. So I pray. What trying days, but hey, you know, we all have them.
Oh indeed. So let's describe, you've been initiated. What's your first day in the SMMI like?
Okay, so there's the first stage, which is aspiracy. So you check out the order, and then the order checks you out. And if they like you, go into postulancy. So the first day was 1995, January 1st. It was the Solemnity of the Holy Mother of God. And my whole family came to see me become a postulant. And I remember Father Gray, which he left now the priesthood, he's the one who blessed me my habit, you know, so I received the habit. And so the first day was more like, you know, like a celebration. You know, it was more to the family to get to know the order as well, in order to get to know my family type of thing. And so it seemed like everything was normal, you know. You couldn't really detect anything out of the ordinary. It just, I mean, even that day looking back, I couldn't see anything honestly wrong that was there, because a lot of things were hidden too, you know, from us.
I've talked to a few other members of the SMMI, and one of the things that I see over and over again is they would come to a person and say, you are special because you are going to be X. Like, I've heard I've heard people being told, you're going to be the one that brings the ministry to Asia. You're going to be the one that brings the word of God to Africa and what have you. Were you promised like you were some sort of more than the other sisters?
Well, actually, they didn't do it in that direction. They did it more like, now this is a place for healing for you, because I had a really extensive childhood of child abuse. I mean, like, for years and years and years. And they knew that, you know, because I told them. And the mother foundress said that, like, half of it was my fault and half was the abuser's fault, because I was sexually abused, okay? So, first of all, that should have been a red flag for them. Like, maybe I'm not ready for religious life, or maybe that, they should, you know, be careful about, you know, having a postulant, because they used it against me. That's what they did. Is okay. So for some people who don't have like abusive childhood, they'll use something else, like such, oh, one day you're going to be this or that. They did, however, they did know I did take a course at St. Hyacinth's, which is the three faces of Jesus in Islam, in Judaism, and in Christianity. And later on, I got sent to Turkey for 2.5 years. So I think that although they didn't tell me that they were bringing me there for that reason, I do think that common sense, that they were just saying, okay, she knows a little bit about these religions, so she's not going to be afraid to jump and she's not going to have culture shock, you know? So, and it was true. I didn't have a problem, but they never told me. They never said anything to me, that I was special or anything like that.
What was the first sign that, okay, something's not right? Something is very awry here.
Okay, when they started yelling at other younger sisters, when they started yelling at me, which I had no idea what I did wrong, and I was just like, I don't know what to make of this, you know? I was like, and here I am, I promise, you know, that I'd become a bride of Christ. And, you know, I just didn't know what to. And I said, oh, it just must be me, you know, because it's my fault that what had happened to me as a child. And I was still going through that, you know, even though I had counseling. But it didn't help, because I just added it. I just said, oh, this is my fault. And I kept saying, oh, this is my fault. I'm such a terrible person. So I excused them in their behavior, how they treated me, because it was my fault. But when they treated someone else, I started to question. I'm like, really? I said, do you have to be that harsh to somebody? This poor postulant's in tears, you know? And it's on a daily basis. And sometimes it happens more than once in a day. So I was just like, wow. You know, like, well, is this how religious life is? And then we're reminded, Sister Teresa would call it like spiritual spankings. She would tell us that we were like children and she had to discipline us. You know, it was really weird. But of course I had no clue, because I had no idea. I just thought it was part of the religious life. I had no clue. I came from a family that didn't practice, Catholic faith. I don't know. Well, I do have in my past a great, great aunt that she died in Auschwitz, I think, but she was an Ursuline nun. That is the only thing. And then on the Puritan side, there was a minister. So maybe it's in my DNA, something, but I had no idea about who nuns were, really, who priests were and stuff. So I was stepping into like a new world. And so I had to just like learn to accept everything.
I'm sure a lot of the listeners are going, well, why didn't you do your research? You have to remember, this is at a time before research was as simple as it is now. This is before internet.
Exactly. And you didn't want to question God. You felt like if the God was calling you to do this, you know, to become a bride of Christ, to a vocation, you don't question God. And it was, you know, reaffirmed, you know, by the superior. if you question your superior, you're questioning God. If you're disobeying your superior, you're disobeying God. It's a mortal sin. Your soul's going to hell, you know? So it's like they practice Jansenism, and I forgot another type of heresy. I was told, you know, when I went through the Catholic counseling and I like broke it down even for the local exorcist, like what we were going through the order. And he says, you were under the influence of two major heresies. One was Jansenism, which Mother Elizabeth Beflacizzi would, she learned that when she was in Carmel, when she was a Carmelite. And she carried that with her into the new order that she founded and all the other orders that she founded. And there was also another one that begins with an M, but I don't know. I have to research it again. But it was crazy. And I'm just like, and I was like, wait a minute, this is not the Jesus Christ I learned about at St. Hyacinth's, you know, how St. Francis viewed Jesus. And she was more like, Jesus is like the just judge, and you know, you've got to even be careful the how much, you know. To this day, I was just peeling like what, potatoes, and I'm like, oh, you better peel it real thin, because if you don't, you're gonna have to, you're gonna pay for it in purgatory. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that is such a heavy cross to carry, you know. So they were training you to be their perfect ideology. It's like, it reminds me of the, like, in the times of Nazism, okay? They were looking for the blue eyed, blonde hair, German, you know, type of Aryan descent. That was it. They did not care about anybody else. So any characteristics that we had, they were wiping out. Our personalities were wiped out.
Take me on it. Take me on the journey. You're in the order. You're starting to say, wait, these sisters are not being treated right. Take me on that journey from these sisters aren't being treated right to I need to get out of here and I need to get out of here now.
Okay. So I go into my novitiate. So we get flown over to Italy. And I remember the night before I go to Italy, I have motion sickness. So I need Dramamine. I kept telling them, please pick us some Dramamine, because if not, I'm going to throw up all over the plane, you know. And they were just, like, adamant that I don't know about the prayers of Almighty God, that I'd be fine, I don't need any medicine. Okay, so the night before, I was having a major anxiety attack because they weren't going to give me any medicine. And I never flew. This is be the first time I flew. But I do have motion sickness. This car rides, I get sick all the time. So I remember Teresa Kovacs, she grabbed, she was superior, my superior, she grabbed my arm. She said, stop playing games. I'm like, what game am I playing? I'm freaked out. I don't want to go to Italy, you know? And so she just, she instead of consoling me, she was mad that I was rethinking about going to Italy. And but then I just, you know, I slept that night, or I didn't sleep. I don't remember really, because it's so long ago. But anyway, I wound up getting on the plane. And what did I do is start throwing up.
How old are you at this time?
I'm 20. I think I'm 21 or 22. Okay. I think maybe still 21. And of course I'm of age and start throwing up. And she says, looks at the clouds. I get even worse. So by the time I get into Italy, I'm off the plane. There comes the Mother Vicar at the time, you know, and she's like, she's trying to transport me. I threw up in her vehicle. She was not too happy about that. I couldn't help it. I was sicker than a dog. And I, you know, I felt horrible, but what else are you supposed to do? So that was one of the indicators. So, okay, so I entered the novitiate in the United States, fly over to Italy. We had to learn Italian language, speak Italian, by the way, when we were postulants. So it was even harder and harder to have that true communication between your superior and just you. And you weren't allowed to talk to the other postulants. You weren't allowed to have friendships or anything like that. So you couldn't have, you know, anything. Like, so I go to Italy, and there we start the novitiate. And then, so it's Sister Dolores, and she's really sweet and everything like that. And my novitiate was beautiful, you know. It was a very time of growth. She was good. That was a good sister. I want to say that. Sister Dolores was a great sister, and she really helped me through a lot of things. But when I became first professor, they put me in with this Sister Stella Marie, who thinks she's an actress or something like that. She winds up physically abusing me, imprisoning me, stealing my medications. So do you think that I thought that that was right? No, I didn't, you know? And I really, she called me a daughter of a prostitute. I was like, you know, how much more can I take this? So I call home, and it was weird. They locked me up, right? But they didn't take away the phone. And I said, well, I guess this is just their stupidity. So I call home, and I'm telling my family what's going on. They are so afraid. They're calling the Mother General. Now the Mother General and the Mother Vicar are speaking, you know, like, what's going on? And they didn't know that there was physical abuse. And so I had to live with this sister, you know. And I had insecticide sprayed by a fourth grader into my airway because I was trying to protect his two-year-old sister. You know, this was after school program. 18 hours, I was unconscious. They didn't check up on me.
Thank you for joining us once again here on The Cult of SMMI. If you would like to get in contact with me, you can do so at strangepathwaysmail@gmail.com. I welcome anybody who was a member of the SMMI, had family members within, or current members. Whether you agree with anything Patricia and Mike Kovac say, or you believe it all to be lies, I want to hear from you. That email, once again, strangepathwaysmail@gmail.com. Thank you. Take care of yourselves and each other.